All right. Hello, my friends, and welcome to Hope for Your Heart. This is Pastor Calvin Corbett with Hickory Ridge Community Church on this Monday broadcast. So glad that you're joining us today. Hope that you had an incredible weekend, and I am so excited. We just came off a marriage retreat, and we had the opportunity to go down to the Outer Banks, and I tell you what, it was a great weekend, and we had learned a lot about oneness. You know, the goal of marriage is not to have your own way, is not to win your spouse over, not to change your spouse, but to become one with your spouse. And they gave a tremendous illustration of how this can be accomplished. And I don't know if you've ever seen those tandem bikes. I actually have a tandem bike. And my son Seth, who has autism, he gets on the back of that thing with me. And we drive around, we go through the parks and go through the neighborhoods. And it works great. You've got two people pedaling together, two people going in the same direction. But it doesn't work so great if the person in the back wants to go in a different direction. Or in my case, as Seth is in the back, he likes to pedal backwards. And the bike that I have, when you pedal backwards, you hit the brakes. And so he's always trying to slow me down because he wants to stop and take a break and I want to keep on going. And so the point is this with a marriage. When you're on a marriage with somebody, you got to be on the same bike. You got to be heading the same direction. You can't have one person pedaling forward and the other person pedaling backwards. You both need to be moving on ahead and heading in the same direction. And when that happens, marriage can actually be a beautiful institution. You know, nobody likes institutions, but when you think about marriage being a beautiful institution, two lives coming together as one, and God using that union to share the gospel. You know, we think about marriage and we think about why is it that Christians are so adamant about understanding what the definition of marriage is and what biblical marriage is all about. And the reason is because it's really a picture of God's unconditional love for us. Well, we had a great weekend, and I want to thank all who were part of that marriage weekend at the Outer Banks, and we came back charged up and ready to see God do great things. As a matter of fact, if you are interested in getting some help with your marriage, there's two areas that we're going to try to be helping you with, and that's going to take place in January and February. And in January, we're going to do a weekend with finances, Friday night and Saturday all day. And so if you're interested in that, please call me. 757-421-7500. And you can sign up for that. It's going to actually be free. And so you can sign up for that. You and your spouse can sign up for that. You don't have to be married to be part of this. If you're a single person and you need some help with your finances, we'd love to have you come for the weekend. And so feel free to call me. It's also going to be on our webpage in just a matter of a week or so. By the time you hear this broadcast, it should be on our webpage. Okay. Another thing that we're doing is in the month of February, we're going to be doing another weekend, but it's not going to be at the Outer Banks. It's going to be at our church, and it's basically going to be a weekend that we focus on marriage, and if you would like to be part of that, same thing, get on our webpage, hrcc7.org, or give me a call at the church at 757-421-7500, and we'll give you all the details for that, okay? Well, today, we are continuing this series on generosity. And we're going to talk today from Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 14. If you've listened to me any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis said this in Mere Christianity: every faculty that you have, your power of thinking or of moving your limbs from moment to moment, is given to you by God. If you devoted every moment of your whole life exclusively to His service, you could not give Him everything that was not, in a sense, his own already. Now, do you get what Lewis is saying? He's saying that everything that we have was given to us by God himself. The ability to think, the ability to move our limbs, the ability to do everything that we do was a gift that was given to us and is given to us by God. So if we give something back to him, we're not really giving something that is ours back to him. We're giving back to God something that is already his. And so today I want to talk to you about wealth and how we can use our wealth to glorify God. We're at Luke chapter 16. We're going to be picking it up at verse number 1. Jesus said to his disciples, there was a rich man, and he had a manager. And he was charged with not taking good care of the manager's possessions. And so he called him and he said, what is this I hear about you? Turn in an account of what you've been doing, because you can no longer manage my affairs. And so the steward or the manager said to himself, what am I going to do? I am one who is going to lose my position. You know, I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do, he said. This is what I'm going to do. When I'm removed from this position, I'm going to have people that will receive me into their houses. So he summoned his master's debtors one by one. He said to the first one, well, how much do you owe my master? He said, 100 measures of oil. And he said to him, well, take your bill and sit down and quickly write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? He said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write down 80. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world, Jesus said, are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourself by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. Well, verse number 10 says this, and Jesus gives us the lesson, and the overall title of this message could be a really bad example giving us a really good lesson. Jesus said in verse number 10, the one who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. And the one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give to you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters. Now, this is a powerful, powerful statement. You cannot have two number ones in your life. You can only have number one in your life. No one can serve two masters. Why? Because he's going to hate one or love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Now, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things, and they ridiculed him. Now, as we see this particular parable that Jesus gives, it's very interesting, but it's shocking. It's somewhat shocking to the audience's ears, and it's actually a little bit uncomfortable to listen what Jesus is doing, because it appears on the surface that Jesus is congratulating this shrewd manager for being dishonest, for taking advantage of his master. But that's not exactly what Jesus is doing. Jesus is driving home a very important point. Now, in order for us to understand what's happening in Luke chapter 16, let's back up just a little bit into Luke chapter 15. Now, Luke chapter 15, there's three parables. There's the lost son, there's the lost coin, and there's the lost sheep. Now, as we look at these three parables, we discover that the people valued something, and because they valued something, they were willing to put themselves in a difficult situation in order to obtain what they valued. The last one, the lost son or the prodigal son, is an example of a son who squandered his father's wealth. And when he lost all that he had, he came to his senses. Now, disciples are there listening to this parable. They're kind of earshot from where Jesus is. This parable in Luke chapter 16 was actually given to the Pharisees. But as we see this particular parable, we see Jesus once again bringing the topic back to the management of money. You know, of all the parables that Jesus shared, one out of three of those parables, 30% of the parables that Jesus taught about, had something to do with the use of money, whether it be how we can earn it or how we should use it. It was a very common subject because Jesus understood something very important about money. How we manage money is usually reflective of our relationship with God, reflective of our relationship with others, and reflective of our relationship with ourselves. Now, we get into Luke chapter 16, and Jesus gives this parable of this shrewd manager. It's actually a parable of a contrast, not a comparison. This is a contrast, kind of like the unjust judge, kind of like the unjust judge who had that widow who kept coming to him and bothering him. And finally, he says, I don't care anything about this widow, but I'm sick and tired of her coming to me and bothering me. I'm going to give her what she wants just so I can get her off my back. Jesus is kind of doing a contrast, and he's saying, if this wicked servant knew how to take worldly wealth to leverage his own position, how much more should we as followers of Christ take wealth and leverage it to reach the world? So as we look at this parable, we could say it's a good lesson from a bad example. As we think about stewardship, and we think about how we are to be a manager, You know, if you're a very rich person, you probably have somebody helping you to manage your funds. I've never been in that position in my life where I had anybody managing my funds. But as you think about this parable, we see that this particular master had so many different people who owed him money. His business was so large that he had to have somebody help him to manage his debtors. And so he didn't want to be personally involved with every one of them, so he hired managers to manage his affairs. You know, executives take care of the affairs of other people. Here we see that it's a story of a person who is not doing well managing his master's accounts. And an audit is being done, and accounting is being done, and we discover that this man's going to come up a little bit short when this audit is done. Now, as we see what he does to preserve himself, he's saying, I got to protect myself. When I lose this job, I'm too lazy to go out there and work. I can't even work an 8-hour day of manual labor. He says, I'm too ashamed to go out and to beg. So what he does with the first guy, he says, quick, take 50% off the bill, and I will take that as full payment. So now as we look at this, the background of this is very interesting. I think the background of this speaks volumes as to where this shrewd manager was. The Pharisees, as they're listening to this, they probably had in the back of their mind the tax collectors. You know, the tax collectors were despised in Jesus' day. As a matter of fact, tax collectors in our day and age are despised as well. I mean, who likes to get a phone call from the IRS? I don't know about you, but if the IRS is calling me, it is probably not good news. They're probably not calling me to say, hey, we've got a bunch of money that we missed on your tax returns, and here you go. No, they're probably saying, we have found a mistake in your tax returns, and we want to collect from you. The tax collectors in biblical times would take, and they were hired by the Roman government. Now, the Roman government was very shrewd. They would take over a town or a village or a province. And as they took over this province, if it was, for example, a primarily Jewish province, they would find a Jew within that province, and they would hire that Jew as the tax collector. That tax collector would earn his money by paying taxes back that he collected back to the Roman government. So let's say the Roman government said, well, citizen A over here owes $100. The tax collector would collect that $100, but he'd also collect his fee. Now, the reason he was so despised is because as you sat down with your tax collector, you weren't sure exactly what he was going to charge you. He may charge you $200 and keep $100 for himself and send $100 back to Rome, and Rome didn't care because all they cared about was getting their cut. Some believe that this parable that Jesus is talking about is an example of that happening. We have this shrewd manager who decided to take a cut on his commission, still giving the master his money. That's why he's being commended, but he's losing a little bit of money himself, but he's losing not in reality. This money that he is allegedly using, now he's going to hold it over your head and says, when I get in trouble, I'm going to come back to you. He says, now remember, I gave you a 50% tax break. I gave you 50% off the bill you owed my master. Now you owe me. Now, this is shrewd of how people do things, but this is kind of how some people operate. And Jesus' whole point is this. If we see somebody who is unjust doing this for the almighty dollar, how much more should we as Christians be willing to do some things and invest our money to reach the lost? This is a very interesting way of Jesus pointing this thing out, but I want to take some takeaways from the lesson of this bad example, okay? And here's some takeaways that I have. The first is the takeaway of the principle of stewardship. You know, every one of us are going to be accountable to God for how we have managed everything that God has given to us. In Psalm 24, it says this, "The earth is the Lord's, and everything that is in it, the world and all who live in it." Going way back to the book of Genesis, God created everything, and he puts Adam and Eve in the garden, and he puts them in there to work it and to take care of it. It is clear that man was created to do work, and that work is this stewardship of all of God's creation. It is the management of all of God's creation that God has given to us. Now, this is a fundamental principle, and it's called biblical stewardship. God owns everything, and we are simply managers or administrators acting on his behalf. So therefore, stewardship expresses our obedience regarding this administration of everything that God has placed under our control. Now, this is all-encompassing. Now, I know we have this tendency, and I had this tendency myself, to compartmentalize things and say, well, you know what? I may not be managing all parts of my life very well, but there's a few little parts of the piece of the pie of my life that I am managing real well, okay? Maybe I'm good at managing my time, but I'm not so good at managing my money. Maybe I'm good at managing my money, but I'm not so good at managing my mouth. Maybe I can manage my mouth, but I'm not so good at managing my attitude, my facial expressions, and my body language. And so we are reminded that everything belongs to the Lord. And we must be good stewards of everything. In Deuteronomy 8:17, it says, "My power, God's power and strength that he gives us is in our hands, and he gives us his power to produce wealth for him." Now, this is amazing when you think about what Moses is saying to the nation of Israel. He's saying to them, God gives you strength, God gives you power to produce wealth, and it's wealth that is for him. He owns it all. In verse 18, it counsels us how we should think. Moses says, "Remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth." So the first point that we take away from this bad example is that we are stewards, that we are to be managing our affairs well. The second is the principle of responsibility. That means that we ought to not only be managing and taking care of things, but we ought to be investing. That is that we should be putting things out so that it can produce actually even more income. In explaining this responsibility, one author says this, "Although God gives us all things richly to enjoy, nothing is truly ours. Nothing really belongs to us because God owns everything. We're responsible for how we treat it and what we do with it. While we complain about our rights here on earth, the Bible constantly asks, what about your responsibilities? Owners have rights, stewards have responsibilities. What is God calling us to do with the wealth that he has given us and with the work that he's given us? He's requiring us to invest this. Now, as a side note on this, I think it's so important that as we're doing this investing, that we are accurate in our assessment and that we're doing it with a heart of gratitude. Now, if you have lived in the Greater Hampton Roads any length of time, and if you've been in this area for a long time, you may have remembered that they used to make the F-150 Ford pickup trucks here in Norfolk. And I remember when this plant was open and I had a lot of guys in the church that were part of the Ford plant, a tremendous, well-paying job. Well, I got to know a lot of the guys that worked at the Ford plant, and some of the guys would complain. They would complain about the long hours. They would complain about the atmosphere at the Ford plant. And I would always remind them, I said, you know, you should give thanks for this job. And I says, many of you are getting paid way beyond your experience and educational level. So you ought to thank God that you have this great job that God has provided for you. And I says, if you don't give thanks for something, God sometimes will take it away from you. Now, I wasn't speaking prophetically, so don't take me wrong, but the Ford plant here ended up closing. And I think part of that is misunderstanding this whole matter of investing. As you think about the principle of an accurate accountability and an accurate assessment of our situation, a steward is one who manages the possessions of another person. You know, we're all stewards of our resources, our abilities, and these opportunities have been entrusted to our care. One day, each of us will give an account for how we have managed whatever God has given us. So as we think about this parable, I go back to the parable of the talents, how God entrusted authority over his creation to us, and he gives different people different skills, different talents. We are responsible for the talents that God gives to us. What are we doing with these talents? If you remember that story of the talents, one person got one talent. Another person got two talents. Another person got five talents. And the guy that had five, he doubled his investment, came back with 10. The guy who had two doubled his, came back with 4. But the guy who had that one talent, he went and he buried that talent. Now, interesting, as you see how God uses that illustration, the guy that had the 10 because he earned an extra 5 got that extra talent. Now, that doesn't seem fair to us, but there's a lesson here that I think is so important. If you cannot manage small things, you will never be able to manage big things. If you're not faithful in the little things, God will never make you ruler over mighty things. Now, this is a kingdom principle, and we must not miss this point, that God has called us to be stewards. God has called us to have an accurate assessment of these gifts that he has given us and to invest them wisely. Well, as you think about stewardship, we are to be accountable for God's property. We're to be accountable for everything that God gives us. We are children of light, not children of darkness. We ought to be very faithful in the little things that God has given us. And then I want to remind you that we also should be faithful, and that faithfulness leads to true riches. That faithfulness with money leads to spiritual riches. I want to remind you what is said in verse number 12, going back to Luke chapter 16. Jesus says this, "If you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who can give you what is your own?" Jesus is reminding us if we don't manage what has been given to us, things that don't belong to us, what will we be charged with or what can we be entrusted with in the future? Jesus goes so far to say, if you cannot be trusted with mammon or money, you cannot be given true spiritual riches. Now, this is so important. I don't want you to miss this today. If God cannot trust you to give back to him 10%, I believe that you're missing a big spiritual blessing in your life. And I'm not saying this saying you ought to give it to me, because I believe that you ought to be giving it to your church. Local churches should get to 10% of your income where you are attending. You know, when I go to a grocery store, if I go to Food Line, I swipe my card and Food Line takes money out of my account. I don't swipe my card and Harris Teeter gets that money. No, Food Line gets my money because that's where I bought my groceries. I think the same is true when it comes to the matter of storehouse tithing. We give back to the church where we are being fed, where we are serving, where we are part of that family. I think about stewardship. If you have a big heart for God and you have a big heart for managing what he gives, that brings blessings. That brings blessings back to us. I think about Joseph. Joseph had this big heart for God. God blessed Joseph's work, and the people around him were blessed because of his faithfulness. You know, a good steward, one who manages the affairs of somebody else, is blessed by God, not because of his good works, but because of his heart. In Genesis 39:5, it tells us how God blessed Joseph's work and the people all around him. Look what it says. "And it came to pass from that time that he made him overseer of his house and over all that he had. And the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that had been in that house and all who were in that field." Now, isn't this amazing? Have you ever thought about the fact that you can be a blessing to many other people by being a good steward, by managing your life well, by managing your health well, by managing your talents well, by managing your time and your resources well? You can be a blessing to other people. You can be able to be freely given to others. You know, I think about generous people, and I think about the attitude behind generous people. I have yet to meet a truly generous person who is a bitter person. Generous people are happy people. You know, the Bible says it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. Now, you know this is true. You may not believe it because you don't always practice it, but in the depths of your soul, you know it's true. And here's the point I'm going to make to prove it. Would you rather be person A, short 10 bucks and have to stop somewhere and says, "Hey, can you help a brother out? Can I borrow 10 bucks from you?" Or would you rather be person B, who has an extra 10 bucks and you can help somebody who needs some help? I don't know about you, but I think most people listening to me would rather be that second person. That person that has an extra 10 bucks, if somebody needs it, it's not going to make them destitute to give it to them. They'll be able to give that money to them and they give it to them joyfully. I don't know about you, but I love being able to help people. I love to being able to bless people. And if I'm going to be generous with other people, sometimes I got to be a little stingy with myself. Now, that seems kind of backwards, doesn't it? Because we look at it, well, if I have any money left over, I'll be a blessing to somebody else. Why don't we live frugally with ourselves so that we can bless somebody else? Why don't we live frugally with ourselves so that we can be a blessing and advance God's kingdom? As I think about what Christ did, that's exactly what he did for us. He emptied himself of his own riches so that he could identify with us. He set aside his powers as God. He set aside some of his attributes of God. He became poor so that we could become rich. So if you want to be like Christ, you got to be generous. So this is a tall order, right? So Lord, just help us to be generous. Help us to be men and women who are not miserly, because that leads to misery, but help us to be generous, hilarious givers, able to give to be a blessing to others. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, thanks for listening to the broadcast. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. God bless you.
Hickory Ridge Community Church is located at 3220 South Battlefield Boulevard, Chesapeake, Virginia. Sunday service times are at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. We'd love for you to join us. For more information, you go to our website at www.hrcc7.org. No matter what you're going through, remember, in Jesus Christ, there is always hope for your heart.